Good evening, everyone. Welcome to American Truth Finders. I'm Neil Douglas, and I'm your host for the show. Hey, you know what? I say this every week, but every week it's true. We have a great show tonight that's lined up for you tonight. And our topic for tonight is Federalizing Police Part 2. And I want you to know that if you didn't hear part one, you can find it on the archives of AmericanTruthFinders.com or on BBS Radio under American Truth Finders or my name or live talk show host, and you'll see the archives. And if it weren't for BBS Radio, we wouldn't even be here. So anyway, my guest tonight is Ray Kirkus. The topic for tonight, are you ready for this, people, is Federalizing Police Part 2, and I said that again because this is so important. And I hope that for those of you that are listening, you're going to call in. And if you don't call in, I posted that I'm on Facebook, and I will take messages. Just go to Neil Douglas and message me if you have a question for Ray or myself, but primarily for Ray, of course, because Ray is our guest, and I've got a lot of questions for him, but I want you to have yours too. Anyway. Ray is an advocate for individual rights and personal liberty. He's a speaker to local groups, including the Tea Party, about police brutality, and increasing militarization of police forces. And he's also a host of a Facebook page titled Exposing Excessive Policing. And he's also actively involved in making every attempt possible to slow down the monster, and I love that word, which is actively, incriminately eroding any semblance of freedom we have left in this country. This is a call-in show, so feel free to call in, ask any questions you might have, and I always tell you, remember, no question is a dumb question. I'm going to add something else real quick, and that is, don't believe anything that I have to say or that any of our guests have to say. We want you to do your own homework, and you decide if what we're saying is right or wrong or truthful or not, because I'm going to tell you something. You need to educate yourself. Anyway, our number here is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. My website is AmericanTruthFinders.com. Other than that, I'm done blobbing to you. So anyway, Ray Kirkus, welcome aboard, and thank you for being my guest tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Neil.
Well, I got to tell you something, guy. You're on top of things. I already know that. Believe me. The reason I wanted to do this show is primarily because this is a serious situation, and as much as the government is trying to deny it, federalizing police is a plan that has been in the making for some time, but it's really, really gained momentum within the last year. Am I correct about that?
That's true. To a certain point, yes, it's true.
Well, the reason I'm asking you that, Ray, because, you know, there's an article that goes to even June 30th I believe I got it from you, actually. It's actually what Obama created, what was called the Task Force on the 21st Century Policing. And am I right on that?
Oh, absolutely. And they created a pilot program for 6 cities in the United States to where they're going to be much more influential into how the police actually, it's not directing the police what to do. It's setting a set of federal standards that the police are going to follow. And again, pilot programs are usually the litmus test to see where they want to go from there. So it's, you know, it's definitely not the end of it. It's just the beginning of what they're doing. But I think in order for people to understand this, they kind of have to go back and run a brief history about, you know, what the nationalization or federalization of the police is all about You know, and this pretty much started back in 94 under the Clinton administration, and you know, with the big crime bill that they put into effect back in 1994, which brought the entire COPS program. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the community oriented policing service, COPS program for more milder, gentler, community oriented type of, you know, a beat officer that would be patrolling the streets at that time. And this is all before 9/11. This is all prior to what happened, you know, and everybody freaking out after 9/11. So the problem was that, you know, it was shortly after the Waco incident. It was after the 101 shootings in California incident. There were all kinds of things going on in the country, and the police were getting a bad rap. So they were trying to put this crime bill together that was partially written by Biden and other people. And it was, like I said, implemented it back in 2014, where they spent about $100 billion or were supposed to spend $100 billion to put 100,000 more police officers on the streets of the United States. That was the point. First of all, it didn't happen. It ended up being about $130 or $140 billion that was spent till date. But the program still exists. COPS still exists. There's it's under the DOJ. They have a website. You can go look at it. I mean, it's, and this is what, at that time, like I said, what they were trying to do is they were trying to get more friendly with the communities and work with the communities with the police department. But of course, 9/11 came by, and things changed. I mean, what happened after 9/11 was that they started implementing a different type of training to the police departments, and a lot of this training, again, this was the $100 billion program that was going to go get a whole bunch of new police officers into the cities. But again, that money wasn't used properly. A brief edit of only 3% of that showed that even $277 million was misappropriated. I mean, it was never used for what it was supposed to be used for, and none of that ever worked, and it's still not working. But that training was supposed to be a kinder, gentler training. It was at one time the police were supposed to shoot at the torso of a suspect because that was the largest body part that was the easiest to hit. It wasn't shoot to kill, it was just the easiest part to hit. Now the new training under Michael Chertoff after 9/11 and the training that they're getting from the Israeli defense and other Israeli organizations that export this type of training worldwide. Of course, the United States is the biggest consumer of this training, is a much more aggressive police force. And again, this is using federal funds to train local police departments of how to be more aggressive and to shoot people in the head rather than to shoot them in the torso, or rather than to negotiate and talk things down, to escalate things and to be much more proactive than reactive that they should be.
Ray, let me ask you real quickly on this. You mentioned the cities that were targeted, and if you don't mind, I'm going to read off the cities that at this point that are test cities, as we might say.
Sure.
And that's Birmingham, Alabama; Fort Worth, yes. Texas; Gary, yeah. Indiana; Minneapolis,
yeah,
Minnesota; Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and Stockton, California. Now.
Yes.
It goes on to say in this article, and by the way, I want to say that the article actually has a picture, and that I think is from the Associated Press picture. I won't swear to that, but I think that's what it's from, where it's from, because it's the AP, and the AP is usually the Associated Press. Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is they're not going to stop there, Ray. They're going to continue with, you know, it's going to grow. As a test pilot, it's no different than a TV pilot. If it's something that people like, it grows.
Sure, but their point on this particular pilot program is different than the original like community policing thing that they were doing. This is more in response to the Michael Brown incident, more in response to training police officers supposedly to be more receptive to racial issues and racial discord that might come in between this. This is more racially motivated than originally they were going to be. See, they back in 1994, even in 1998, when they were using this entire this cops community oriented policing, there's a book, I believe, I can't remember the name of it. There was a book that you can find online, and they were talking about moving more from the 60s mentality of dealing with crowd control, for example, of rather than being aggressive and forceful, as to trying to allow a little bit more and understanding that during a protest that there is going to be some discord, some community discord, that there's going to be some angry people, and to basically, I'm not saying give in to the crowd, but try to be more understanding and more talking to the crowd, as in response to the Occupy movement, for example, where they started, you know, just spraying tear gas at everybody and arresting people left and right. So, again, until 2001, after 2001, this all changed. And Obama himself actually said just kind of recently, in response to the Freddie Gray incident in Baltimore, where Freddie Gray was killed while he was right. in police custody, and I'm going to quote this, but he says now the challenge for us at the federal government is that we don't run those police forces. He goes, I can't federalize every police force in the country and force them to retrain. That's a very key word, to retrain. But what I can do is to start working with them collaboratively, that they can begin this process of change themselves. And this is exactly why this pilot program was started, and this is exactly what the retraining is supposed to be all about. But it's funny that they want to retrain these police departments after the president has been supplying them with all the war weaponry that they have. I mean, this is really, it's ironic, is that they give them the tools to be very proactive, to be very aggressive, to be very militant or militaristic, and all of a sudden now they want to come up and they want to retrain the police forces to be, I guess, kinder and gentler, you know.
But Ray, that doesn't make sense, because did he not even back off of that statement by coming out with pretty much what you just said, of being a kinder and gentler, taking away bayonets and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is this, I'm going to ask you a question, and this is not really getting off track, but getting to the point where I want to know something. Because the Department of Homeland Security is funding this whole program. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, secondly, are there cities and towns, and I say towns, I'm not talking about large towns necessarily, that do have military type of equipment for their police departments?
Well, absolutely. It's the 1033 program and other variations of it, which gives them, and the whole point now with the 1033 program was originally it was designed, again, the federal intention, okay, and again, the intention of having this equipment was to use for two things. Number one, you have the federal war on drugs, so it was supposed to be for the drug war, to go after illegal drugs, and second, for counterterrorism. Those were the two things that all this equipment and all this training that the local police departments, no matter how local, even departments that only have 10 or 15 officers, were getting everything from grenade launchers to M16s to MRAPs, mine resistant ambush protected vehicles. I mean, we have one in our county. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff here. But the problem is that when you take this federal stuff, and you said this, they backed down. Actually, the truth of the matter is they didn't back down. What they just did is they put more restrictions on the stuff you can get. You can still get the M16s. You can still get the grenade launchers. You can still get everything else, because the military doesn't want this stuff back. Now, the point is that there's always been military surplus, but there's never been as much as we have now, because we have a military-industrial complex that makes this stuff so fast, and a lot of it that the local municipalities get and police forces get is still brand new. It's not even been used. I mean, it's not like an old Jeep or anything else. Some of the stuff is still wrapped up. It's just it was never allocated to anything. It's like new old stock. And these guys are getting this stuff, and there's so much of it that even though there's rules that are applied to how you can use it, the military, they don't want it back. They don't want it back. They don't want to have to take it back, because the whole point is they're trying to get rid of it. They don't want it. It's already past their use, you know, whatever, they're getting new stuff and more updated stuff. So they're trying to figure out ways to where they don't have to take it back. For example, there's Humvees. We have Humvees in our town, which were originally not even deeded to our town. They were still deeded with the military. But now, if you didn't use them for, they had to be used for specific purposes. They had to be used for police, or I said originally had to be used for counterterrorism or for you know, drug enforcement. Now, as long as they're used for some type of police work, they don't take them back. I mean, so what is police work exactly? You know, again, if somebody's just driving around in a Humvee patrolling, it's acceptable. And that's what you're getting now. You're getting these Humvees that are patrolling small towns because the military does not want this stuff back. They want to keep it out, and they'll do whatever it takes to keep it out there. And
well, actually, what they're doing, Ray, this whole thing is asinine. And I hope our audience is listening. I really wish you'd call in with your questions because I'm going to tell you something. You better think about this. Number one, it's coming out of your pocket. Whether you want to believe this or not, it's your taxpayer money that's paying for this. And secondly, I'm sure there are other people listening out there that have seen these same type of things, like the Humvees that Ray has talked about, has been talking about, and other maybe military style equipment. Even Ray, I'm going to bring this up. Even like in Ferguson and or Baltimore, wherever that might have been, you had these military police looking outfits with the black masks, the black outfits, and you name it. I mean, they looked military. The police looked military. Now, I mean, am I imagining things, or is this really happening?
Well, it's of course it's happening. Like I said, under Michael Chertoff, when he was the head of Homeland Security, the training for police officers changed, and a lot of the older cops will tell you that. I mean, it's everything, and the training was offered free or of a very, very low charge to local police departments to get in on this training, and a lot of this training is based on the way the Israeli Defense Forces deal with Palestinians. I mean, and it's a very aggressive training. It's very military type training, and this was offered, like I said, most of the time free of charge to a lot of departments or reduced charge. And of course, there's nothing free. I mean, the GENSA, which is the Israeli, I want to say, it's their joint. Hang on, I can't remember what that exactly stands for, but it's their organization that they export. Israel is a big exporter of arms, believe it or not. It's exporter of arms and also exporter of this type of training, because other countries utilize this. China utilizes this training. They've exported this training to China, to India, to France, to other countries, but nowhere more than in the United States. And this is where they're getting this entire airport security. I mean, now they're looking at the airport security in a different way. They're looking the way that the Israelis look at it, airports. They're I guess you could say stereotyping people, or looking for certain actions, or doing this and that. And this training came under Chertoff, and these police departments utilize this training, and it's a very aggressive training. A lot of people wonder why a lot of these police officers get off murdering people, for example, because, you know, they point a baseball bat at them and they shoot them in the head. Well, the bottom line is that these officers get off because they have been trained to react this way now. And nobody talks about the training. It's like, well, how did this guy get away with this? Well, they got away with it because that's what they're taught to do now. You know, if he picks up a golf club, well, the rationality for that now under this federal training is, well, if he has a golf club, he could knock that M16 out of your hands with that golf club, and then he could take that M16 and shoot you. So you have no choice but to shoot him if he's standing there 30 feet away from you with a golf club, because he is becoming aggressive. And this is the kind of training that we're getting in the United States, as in comparison to, hey, put the golf club down, you know, tell him 10 times. No, now it's not 10 times. It's kick the door in and basically fire in 600 rounds before you figure out what's going on, and then sort it out.
Okay, let me throw this at you. Ray, a lot of these people that are on police force, and listen, there are some very good police officers. Trust me, I know that.
Absolutely.
I believe you know it. But here's something I'm going to throw at you and the audience. And that is, a lot of these people that are on the police forces do come from the military, and a lot don't. But at the same time, I'm wondering, and I'm throwing a very way off the wall question here, how many of these people have been on some kind of psychotic type of drug that messes with their brain, that it's almost like a brainwashing or mind control thing for the police. Now, I'm not saying everyone, but I'm just saying for maybe some of the guys that have been in the military, and I'm not accusing that, but I'm asking a question. Is that a possibility?
Well, of course it is. First of all, a lot of the antidepressants that most people are on nowadays have all kinds of violent side effects. That's a given. That's already known. I mean, most people know that they're not only suicidal, but they're homicidal. I mean, in addition to that, you're absolutely right. A lot of these guys were trained in Iraq, and some of them get a high out of doing this stuff, as far as I'm concerned. And again, yes, there's a lot of good police officers, but the training, the adrenaline, especially in the raids now that goes in. I mean, you just got to think about this, the whole mock up to get to the, you know, to get to the raid, especially if it's the wrong house, you're going to raid the wrong house. I mean, this stuff is like, it builds up inside of you. You know, you're just, you know, I don't even know how to explain this. I mean, you're going into battle, and that's exactly how they start talking about it, is that they're going into a battleground. It's a, you know, the streets are a battleground. The police are not supposed to be, even though they're designed under Robert Peel's rules as a militaristic organization, because they do have rank and file, they do wear uniforms, there are semblances. I mean, police have always been to a certain degree militarized. Okay, but they first of all, they've never been nationalized. Like I said, that all started in 1994, and now once you nationalize this, like I think I was talking to you before, telling you about JENSA. JENSA is the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. All right, and right. They, under them, they have what's called the Law Enforcement Education Program, LEAP. And JINSA claims to have arranged, over 9,000 American law enforcement officials at federal, state, and municipal level about training. 9,000 supervisors in the U.S. police program are being trained in a totally different type of, a totally different kind of methodology as to how police officers have to react in certain situations. And it's all based on, you know, the way the Israelis react to the Palestinians. And this is very important to understand. I mean, they're doing it to homeless people. They're doing it to people, you know, old ladies. They're doing it everywhere. And maybe, you know, I'm not going to say that it's a good thing to nationalize any of this, but if you're using the federal funds to train them to be a certain way, then what alternative do you have to retrain them, as President Obama said, not to be that way? Because something has to give here. You can't keep training these people to be soldiers, and the federal money is training them to become soldiers.
Ray, it is not going to change. I really truly believe in my heart it's not going to change, and I think that when this is totally happening, it becomes extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, totally extraordinarily dangerous. I know that there are people out there listening to our show right now that are thinking, my gosh, you know, I've seen it. I see it all the time. It even happens on the news. What's happening to our police departments? Why, you know, why are they just, you know, killing people and asking questions after they've killed them? And the police get off, like you said. And I think it's like you, in a sense, like you said, it's like they've got a built-in adrenaline all of a sudden. You know, and this is serious, because I'm going to say something that you may or may not agree with, but we could go back to the time of Hitler and the Soviets, you know, and their KGB. You know, they federalized their police, and guess what happened? Their police went door to door and knocked people's doors down, took them, shot them, did whatever they wanted to do. Ray, am I wrong about this? Is it my imagination?
In the United States, the numbers actually don't lie. And in the United States, in 2014, the numbers are close to 1,000 people. The United States government or the United States police have killed over 1,000 of their own people. I mean, if you're lucky, Germany might kill 5 or 10 or even one a year. But we've killed 1,000 of our own people by our police forces. I mean, and this is kind of a staggering number. And again, by the way, this entire crime bill back in 1994, the act was supposed to make the United States Department of Justice issue a report to the use of excessive police force by law enforcement officers on an annual basis. And of course, that never happened. 20 years down the line, it never happened. The DOJ does not keep these stats. It's private. Private agencies that go and collect this. As a matter of fact, the local police departments, in many cases, don't even keep a record of police excessive policing or killings and injuries by their police officers. They don't report that to the federal.
Well, isn't that just like any other government department that doesn't report anything to the American people? Well, no. I'm serious. I mean, I'm not. Because look, all right, I'm going to give you an example. I want to jump into this a little bit, and I'm going to probably upset some people out there that are listening, but I don't care. This is too darned important to ignore. This thing can get so out of hand that you, as an American citizen out there, we're already losing enough of our rights, let alone having our doors kicked down and blown away before you even get to say what's going on. And that could be the future, ladies and gentlemen. And if you don't worry about yourself, you better worry about your children or your grandchildren. But Ray, I want to say something. When you've got a president, and I'm sorry for all of you liberals that might be listening, but when you've got a president that has an advisor by the name of Al Sharpton that wants to federalize police, and he goes to these riots and helps incite them, what is wrong with this picture? Ray, do you have any agreement with that, or do you have an argument against me?
I have to agree with you on that. But again, as long as you keep pushing the federal government into this, I mean, and that's what they're doing. They're pushing the federal government into local policing. First of all, the federal government has its law enforcement arm, and that's the FBI, and it's supposed to deal with federal crimes or interstate crimes and things like that. That's what the FBI is for. And as far as, enforcing. But on the other hand, I just want to bring this up so you understand this, okay? It's the grants. Everybody's always after the free money. First of all, there is no free money. There's only debt. So, I mean, again, you could say it's the taxpayers. It's not even us that are going to pay for it. It's our kids and grandkids because this money doesn't exist. But it's the grants. For example, Click It or Ticket, okay? Click It or Ticket is a perfect example of a federal grant, all right? These local agencies here in Michigan, local police departments, they have a day that they have to, and it's grant day. They even call it grant day. And they get local police departments together, all these municipal police departments, and they all converge into one town, and they do nothing but, I mean, it's like cherries and berries in the whole town. You go down any street, everybody is pulled over everywhere, okay, because they're just looking for nothing but seatbelt violations because they're going to get money. They're going to get federal money for all the tickets that they write. And they do it one day in this town, and the next month they all get together. They send cops to another town. They do it in another town. And it's like if you call the police department, it's kind of funny. It's like, can I talk to somebody? Or, oh, well, they're all out right now. The chief is out because it's grant day. It's click it day. It's money day. It's revenue day. That's one source that they have, and they're getting this. They get it for that. They get it for the checkpoints for DUIs, pulling people over during the holidays for having checkpoints for DUIs. And another thing is the civil asset forfeiture. That's the best. That's using federal law to confiscate money. It's usually money is what they want outside of their budgets that they can the police departments can get for their toys without usually charging anybody with a crime. So if you're driving down the street and heaven forbid you happen to have $5,000 on you, whether you're going to buy a car or whether you just want a bunch of money at the casino or for whatever reason, it's your business that you have $5,000 or $3,000 or $10,000 because you're going on vacation. They find that money in your car. They take it. That's it. It's done. They take it. They take your money. And there's nothing you can do about it. And this is utilizing usually the federal civil asset forfeiture law. So
Ray, let me interrupt you there. That's almost like an illegal search and seizure.
It is. It is. But I urge anybody to look it up about civil asset forfeiture and how much money. And then these departments say, oh, we take your car. Oh, this is a drug dealer's car. We're taking your car. Oh, look, and a lot of times they'll even put a sign on the back. Oh, this is a car taken from a drug. But the drug dealer was never charged with anything. That's kind of interesting. So, I've actually watched this. I've sat in little council meetings and township meetings to where the police chief got up and said, oh, yeah, and we got the $1,800 in the civil aperture thing, and we bought this and we bought that. Up and over the budget. They could buy stuff. It's their play money. It's money for their toys that they want.
Well, you know, let me tell you something. I, for those that are may or may not be aware, in many of the cities have made agreements, even with the campus police where there's colleges, that they can now go and make arrests on city streets. And in fact, in Cincinnati, that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was a campus police officer that shot and killed that guy straight out blank right in the head or wherever he shot him and killed him because he had a bottle of fragrance.
Yes. There was another one another campus cop that shot a guy because he was being disrespectful. He killed him because he didn't like him because he was being disrespectful.
So where does it go from here, Ray?
Well, it goes wherever we let it go to. I guess what happens is what we allow to happen. That's what happens, Neil.
Okay. Okay. Now this is where I'm going to give out our phone number real quick again. The number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want you to call in if you have anything or message me at Neil Douglas on Facebook, because I'm going to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. This is nothing to play with. This is not a game. This is not a fairy tale. This is not something that's just been made up and being passed on to you. But I'm going to tell you, you better pay attention. You better pay very, very, very close attention. And Brad, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but, you know, when you said, you know, as long as we let it, look, the people in this country don't have a voice. You know that. When anybody wants to do something, the federal government, Congress, I want to know anybody out there that's had Congress, anybody from Congress or even the Supreme Court, the president, I don't give a darn who it is. Call you up and say, look, we're thinking about passing this particular bill, such and such and such and such. When did you know, what do you think about that, Mr. Jones? If anybody has had that call, I want you to call us or message me right now, because I don't believe it's ever happened. And if it has, by gosh, it was either a poll and somebody was lying that they were a congressman of some kind from the Senate or the House of Representatives. Because I'm going to tell you what, I've never received a call like that. I don't know about you, Ray, but I know I haven't. Anyway, I didn't interrupt you, Ray.
Oh, no, you didn't interrupt me. And no, I don't think anybody's received such a call. As a matter of fact, you can probably call your congressman all you want, and you'll never get to talk to them either. So it's really a sad state of affairs. I don't have a solution. I just go into this and you know, try to do what I can do at any local level and speak up when I can, to my local representatives. I mean, I've been there. I've brought this up, and it's interesting. Like in my little city, when I brought this up, we had the police chief say, "Well, we were instructed by a Colonel so and so of the through the MOA, because that's the agreement that the state has with the Department of Defense in accepting some of this gear." And Michigan is kind of hard to find information about what Michigan municipalities have under the Freedom of Information Act, because they claim that that they have a qualified immunity from on giving this information. It's exempt from FOIA. So they don't want to tell you what they have, but nonetheless, I did find out a list that was before they started not telling you what they had, that we had, you know, things like flight helmets and all kinds of mess kits. And I mean, like, I can't remember, 1,400 mess kits in a little town where we have 10 cops and you know, flight helmets. I mean, literally, you know, I have 16 flight helmets. I'm not sure what we needed them for. But later on, of course, my police chief told me that, well, they were utilized when they were looking for somebody who was lost out on the lake, you know, with the flight helmet. I mean, these are $2,500 flight helmets, $2,500, $3,000 flight helmets. You can get all kinds of stuff. I mean, you can get airplanes, you can get helicopters, you can get, I mean, it's amazing what you can get through these 1033 programs. It's, I mean, there's some stuff that's fine, generators, things like that. I mean, tents, whatever. I mean, it's literally, hey, you want to go shopping, you know, just look up what you can get from your 1033 program and put it in the application and you can get it, you know, bipods, tripods, night vision scopes. I mean, I don't even know what we have, to be honest with you. I don't know what our police department has. So,
well, you know, that brings up an interesting point though. You know, when you say that, you know, you work with your local community, your local people. The question is, though, when you have a council, you know, a board of people that's made up of an uneven number, right? That does the voting. I don't care if everybody in town is against something, and not everybody in the town knows what they're going to vote on. But let's just say, for example, I don't care, to make it simple, lowering the grade situation for kids in school. You know, it doesn't matter whether 100 people get up and say, no, this is not a good idea, because then what you're doing is you're allowing good students not to even excel, okay, and yet the board made up of say 7 or 9 people, doesn't matter. All it needs is that one vote of, let's say it's 7 people, then all four they need is fourth, the fourth one, which is one person making a decision for the whole community. So the community has absolutely nothing to say what goes on in any town, city, or village, or anywhere in this country.
Well, the problem with that is, and again, we can go a little bit deeper than that. The problem with that is when these boards, almost everybody on a board has to take, when they're sworn into office, they take an oath to defend and support the Constitution, and usually the hierarchy is the United States being first. So every single thing that you do that you have to weigh against this document to see if it's constitutional or not to do this. I mean, and again, you know, the what's a democracy besides two wolves and a lamb, you know, deciding on what's for dinner? The problem is that's what they're doing. They don't care that they took an oath of office. They violate their oath of office, and they, you know, they take this federal money. I mean, right here in my town, I've got a mayor he'll take 100 Hummers if he can get them. That's great. It's all free. They can't comprehend that when the word is free, it's free, or it's matching funds, or it's a grant. It's something that we never have to pay for, you know, and we have to do everything for the now because it's good for us. I guess I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because of how governments employ and how people who work for government see things. I don't know how it is. Maybe they never had to have a real job to try to figure out that you have to actually work for something. Nothing is free.
Well, let me just ask you this. Yeah, well, let me just throw this at you, for crying out loud. What more do the Where do the local board members, your city, your county, whatever, where do they learn their lesson but from out of Washington, D.C., where every one of them swears to uphold the Constitution, and I want everybody to tell me how many of them are really holding up the Constitution, for crying out loud. Even the president, and I'm, you know, it has broken the law. The Republicans have even said so. The Democrats have said so. But who's doing anything about it? No, it doesn't matter. Let him break the Constitution. So what happens with the next president? He doesn't even have to follow the Constitution. Also, let's throw the damn thing away.
No, that's true.
I mean, I'm sorry when I get loud.
I'm not arguing no. Those points. I'm just, you know, the first thing that has to stop, and I say this over and over, and nobody listens to this part, is you got to stop going after the grants. I mean, the whole point is the grants are dangling carrots to get you locked into contracts. Law is contract. I mean, that's why, I mean, technically, we're all federalized across the board completely. I mean, you could think about it one way or another, but I mean, every single county takes emergency management grants for their emergency management preparedness. I mean, yeah. Missouri did it. I mean, Missouri received so much money. I mean, where this Ferguson happened, they received $40 million from the Department of Homeland Security for state and local programs. They received $19 million in emergency performance grants, $10 million in urban area security initiatives. I mean, they were getting money from the feds left and right. When you take this money, you have to apply for it. You agree to terms and conditions. Nobody gives you a blank check and says, here's $20 million from the federal government. You guys just use it for whatever you want to use it for. That's not how it works. You got to follow this set of rules, and you have to obey the mandates that are set by the feds. I mean, we did it here in my town. They accepted a DNR money from the Department of Agriculture, which was federal. They paved the parking lot where there was a boat launch ramp, and then they wanted to have excess beach parking parked there, and they couldn't do it because that was in the rules. You couldn't do that. Now you paved that. You took the federal money. Now you can't collect any more revenue from beach parking because it's only free parking for the boat ramp. They didn't look at this. It's just free. It's free. Look at all this, dangling all this money. And the bottom line is there is no money because the budget supersedes whatever money is coming in to begin with. There's a deficit usually of 50% or more. So, I mean, this money doesn't even exist. They print this money, they give it to the municipalities, and our grandkids are going to have to pay it back. And everybody just, it's like normal. You know, it's, I guess everybody lives on their credit cards too. It's the same.
Well, Ray, let me throw something at you because this, you know, when we talk about federalizing police, this really is got to be a frightening thing. But when you talk about this money, free funding, that's made available by the Department of Homeland Security, think about this, and because money creates power.
Yes.
So therefore, our cities, our little towns, our counties, whatever the case may be, because of the Homeland Security funding these kinds of things, the power is there. And believe me, people, if you can fight the power, good luck. That'd be like stepping in the ring with the heavyweight champion, and you've had no boxing lessons.
We have a sheriff who takes an oath to the Constitution who is the highest elected law enforcement official in the county. Actually, he can kick the feds out if he wanted to. And he has made statements in public, and I'm going to quote this. I will do whatever the federal government tells me to do. There you go. That's where we're at.
Okay. Now that takes me to, and you may not have had a chance to hear this show. That takes me to Jade Helm 15, because this is what this test market is, to find out which sheriffs in each county that this being tested in is being friendly to the federal government and which sheriffs are not.
So our sheriff's offices, they share offices with federal with the feds. Our under sheriff has actually gone to FBI training. He has, I don't know what exactly that consists of, but he has been trained by the FBI. So again, there's no difference anymore. I mean, as far as these bureaucrats are concerned, the feds are at the top. I mean, how many times have you watched a TV show where there's something going on locally and all of a sudden the feds walk in? Oh, we're taking from here. We're taking over. Oh, really? Well, you're taking over because contractually you can. Because contractually, this municipality, whether it's a county or a state or a village or whatever, has taken federal money in some way, shape, or form and given you the authority to come in here and take over. And that's exactly what they do, because they can't. Under all these, especially under the Federal Emergency Management Act, under the President PPDA, Presidential Policy Directive Number 8, under Bush, all these, this is all nationalizing everything, nationalizing the counties, nationalizing the cities, nationalizing the towns, and at the very end, nationalizing the police.
And
the local police departments are writing tickets, seatbelt tickets, which are under a federal mandate. Not under a state mandate, under a federal mandate, because they're going to get federal money for writing these tickets.
That's where my next question was going to be to you. Would this going to local become making federalizing local police? I don't care if it's a small town, big town, middle-sized town, what kind of town it is, and county. When it gets to that point, and it's going to happen, I can tell you right now, the handwriting is on the wall where it's going to be, ladies and gentlemen, all the whole United States. Number one, if they don't, number one, their funds will be cut off, just like any state when they don't want to participate in a state in a federal program, they just threaten them with taking away their federal funds. So getting Correct. Back to that point, Ray, it is going to happen. The matter of fact, where it becomes nationwide, is just how long is it going to take?
Well, I guess we'll find out after these first six cities. Gary happily took the money for whatever they're gonna do in Gary here to retrain the police department. So, and that's close
well, yeah,
by.
And Ray, this is, you know, I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but I'm gonna tell you what, you bring up so many things that just fire me up. I gotta tell you.
I apologize for that.
No, don't apologize. That's great. But sometimes I get a loud. I'm sure our engineer is just frantically trying to lower the levels. But anyway, and I apologize to our great engineer for that. But let's take this a step further, Ray. Let's say that you, because you are active in your community. And we're not going to tell the ladies and our audience what community you're in, but you're active. You're an activist. You are trying to get honesty back into your community. Correct?
I try.
Okay. Number one. Number two. If in fact that when it becomes after this test market, because it'll be a wider test market until it is finally agreed upon, this is going to happen. Now then, there you are sitting at your home. You're an activist against corruptness, against this type of policing, against whatever. And they come knocking on your door because you're an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to ask you any questions because they're federal police officers. And they can plant whatever they want to on you.
Sure.
If you follow what I'm saying? And say, well,
sure.
Look.
Go into my house, and even if I have cameras, they can break the cameras. They can do whatever. They'll do whatever. They can do that. That's what my wife worries about. I mean, but yeah, that's what they can do to us people. But, you know, you got to do something because, you know, I mean, silence, you know, isn't going to is acquiescence. Just being quiet about everything. Everybody who doesn't do anything, okay, is acquiescing and allowing all this to happen. If you don't, again, you said, well, okay, we're letting it happen. Well, we are letting it happen. If people did one-tenth of what I do, if they just showed up at a local meeting once in a while and said something, rather than these local groups seeing the same faces showing up to the same meetings, they get tired of it. It's like, oh, it's only you people. Who cares about you? Because you don't represent anybody, you know, and that's the way they look at it. So they don't care when these activists show up or a few activists show up. And when do really people really get care about stuff is when it happens to them. You know, again, when I'm sure you've heard that when they came for the Jews, you know, that, you know, I didn't say anything because I wasn't a Jew. You know, well, when they came for me, you know, there was nobody left to stick up for me. And that's kind of how it is. I get people that call me all the time saying, oh, look what they did. Look what they did to me. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm sorry that happened to you. But where have you been? I've never seen you at a meeting. I've never seen you anywhere. I've never seen you do anything. And all of a sudden you want somebody to stick out your neck to help you. So people need to get involved more before they, you know, when will they get involved? When will a mother get involved? A mother will get involved when her baby doesn't have any milk. I mean, that's when she's going to get involved. That's when she's going to start jumping up and down. Until then, you know, they're going to take what they can get. And so many people are feeding off of this. Unfortunately, so many people, you know, the police departments, the bureaucrats, they love this stuff. And again, there's another problem that I see, that the more I get into this political reality that I see that most people that sit and work and are involved in the government usually have, so there wouldn't be a conflict of interest, usually have a government job somewhere else. in another municipality. For example, there's so many people that are on the school board that also work in different police departments, or people who are a tax assessor in one municipality are actually a supervisor in another municipality. So all these people basically suck off the same teats. I guess I could say it that way. They're all government employees, and they all get really good salaries because usually governments pay pretty good, and they're involved in more government. So it's kind of scary the way it all gets put together. But that's what I've been noticing more and more.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Ray. And that's why when you say, you know, I'm going to tell you right now. I know for a fact the feds watch me. I know that. They have in the past, and they're still watching me because they know I'm not going to keep my mouth shut. I'm not going to keep my mouth shut. I don't care who knows it. I don't care if they come and get me. You know, I'm at an age where what difference does it make? It is my children and grandchildren or great-grandchildren. You're right about that part. You follow what I'm saying? So, therefore,
yes, I do.
I'm going to be an activist. And that's what I'm trying to be. And you're being an activist, and I think you're doing a wonderful job of it. Trust me, I do. And I appreciate the work you are doing. You're exposing the police, excessive policing and the brutality and what's going on. This has to be done. The thing of it is, for those people like you said, to sit back and wait until it happens to them and say, well what do I do now? Well, gosh, folks, if you're not going to stop and go to your councils and say, look, we've had enough. You're not, you know, you if you want to take us all to prison, then take us all. There's not enough room for everybody in any jail, anywhere, in any town, for any police to put them in.
Not yet.
Sorry about that, Ray.
Not yet. All they got to do is build a wall around your city, and you're in. So that's it. I mean, the question
is,
when they finish the wall with Mexico, will it be to keep them out, or will it be to keep us in? That's a good question. So
that is a good question. I like that. Well, you know, seriously, Ray, we know this is going to go someplace. It's been in the making since the Clinton era.
1994 was the biggest crime bill, and that's still in existence. Like I said, over $140 billion dollars has been spent on that, and most of it's been misappropriated. I mean, and it's really a shame, and we're not safer, and more people are getting killed by the police. But what's interesting is more people are getting killed by the police, but police getting killed in the line of duty is actually the lowest it's been in decades. And most of the officers that get killed in the line of duty usually aren't killed by somebody else, but are usually involved either in an accident, whether if they're like on the side of the road writing a ticket, somebody hits them or drives off the road or something like that.
Right.
But it's usually not getting killed by somebody with a gun or something like that. So it's interesting how that works. So they're safer, much safer than even a guy, for example, you know, working on a boom truck hanging cable TV. They have a safer job than he does. So. But yet, you know, there are heroes, you know. So
Ray,
I don't have a problem with my local police department. I'm just going to clarify that. If people who know my name and if they might be listening to the show, I get along with my police chief quite well. But we still do disagree on this federal funding. I mean, we really do. And he looks at it as this money that he can use and money that, you know, that they can. And of course, this federal funds. They don't go into the budget. That falls outside of. That's not seen in the budget. That's like the comprehensive annual financial reports. That's the money that doesn't have to be accounted for because it's not tax revenue or collected in fines or taxes. So that's money that they can do other things with that they don't have to account for.
Is that any different than the IRS or an audit of our entire country, for crying out loud? We can't even get into the IRS records. Ray, we got about 2 minutes left here to wrap things up. Here's the thing I want to mention to you is with you working as hard as you are as an activist, and I'm glad you do get along with your police department, because I'm sure that you do have some nice, good people there, even though you disagree. You know, but sometimes disagreements are okay It's just like, you know, a Democrat and a Republican, when they get together, they can be the greatest friends. But when they start talking about politics, it's a whole different ballgame. But I want to thank you so much that you became did my show tonight. I'm really honored that you were on. You are very up to date on what's going on, and I thank you so much. And I hope, you know, of course I do follow your website, your Facebook site. So I just want to say thank you so much. And I hope you had a good time anyway.
Oh, I was. It was great. And thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, listen, I don't want you to go away until the engineer cuts it and tells us we're off the air, because he'll probably want to say thank you also. They usually do. And sometimes our guests do hang up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Neil Douglas. This is American Truth Finders. I'm not sure exactly how much time I got left. I know last time it was 2 minutes, so I'm probably down to 30 seconds. Okay. Anyway, you can reach me. You can go to my website, americantruthfinders.com. You can find me under Neil Douglas on Facebook. And I encourage you to continue to listen to bbsradio.com, because I'm going to tell you what, they got some great programming. They're great people to work with. Also, this show will be on my archives and on BBS archives, on my website and BBS website. I would say either tomorrow or Tuesday at the very latest. They're very good about getting it up. If you missed the show, or if you want to re-listen to it, go to the archives, take a good listen, and I really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Good night. Have a good week. God bless, and please stay safe.